You're listening to The Line Break from The Poetry School. I'm Ryan Van Winkle, and over the years, I've interviewed a wide range of inspiring poets from around the world. In this series, I present some of my favorite interviews from our archive and offer some ideas for your own creative work.
I write a lot. Poetry is a way for me. Poetry is a living. And I don't mean a living that I make my living of it, but I live by it. So writing is, and I always tell writers, in workshop, you know, write it. I mean, don't not write it, write it. I mean, you come to the issue of whether you publish it or not, you fight that battle.
That was some excellent advice from the poet, journalist, and editor Kwame Dawes. I'm very excited about sharing this conversation with you. I originally met Kwame for our Scottish Poetry Library podcast, and loved his sensitivity, his sense of humor, and of course, his poetry. Kwame is the only poet I can think of who has an Emmy Award. He won it for his work covering HIV/AIDS in Jamaica. He's also covered the aftermath of the earthquake in Haiti. As you'll hear in this podcast, I have a degree in journalism and even practiced it for a number of years, but always with a sense that it wasn't quite right for me, that my ability to convey a story was being hampered by journalistic constraints. So I was delighted to sit down with Kwame in the green room of the Beyer Theater in St. Andrews and to discuss the range of his work. As a journalist and poet, he's chronicled and he's transformed people's real-life experiences into beautiful, painful art. He writes about tough things, and here he discusses that process.
I think I'm writing about the things that come my way. I usually describe myself as having this odd anatomical aberration of having a cesspool in my brain, and it just takes stuff in without any filter. There's no filter going in. Fortunately, there's a filter coming out, which God knows.
When did you learn to get that filter on the way out?
Yeah, it took a while, but I finally got it in place, and I do change it every so often because it gets clogged. But so I take in, and I honestly have to say that I don't think of a poem in the moment of observation. I write poems, and you probably know this sensation. It's only when you come to the page that you realize things you knew, but you never really were aware of until you come to the page to write. Writing actually brings stuff through to me. And I always describe it as coming through this cesspool of experience. But the other part of my response is that if we don't, in other words, if the poet, who is the one to articulate through the mastery of craft and language, what is felt and what is seen and what the world sees, you know, that Pope idea of what is so often felt but never so well expressed, I think the poet has a kind of responsibility to be the one who manages to articulate this world for the society. And then the third impulse, I think, that drives me is the quest for beauty. The quest for beauty in the things that look beautiful, obviously, and the things that seem ugly, but there is a beauty in it, and that there's something transformative about writing poetry, because I think it turns it into beauty by the very act of making it into craft, something that is crafted. It's like the blues. I mean, we think of the blues as sad music, but the blues can't be sad music because we dance to the blues. We laugh and we drink and we party to the blues. So what kind of sad music is that? The subject of the blues is sad, but the object, the act of the blues is an actual resistance to that sadness. The blues in its structure takes the chaos of life and turns it into this art, this song. And this is the song that when we hear it, you know, trouble, trouble, I've had it all my days. Trouble, trouble, I've had it all my days. Seems like trouble gonna follow me to my grave. And you think, okay, that's nice. You know, that's beautiful. It may be a week, it may be a month or two. It may be a week, it may be a month or two. But the day you left me, honey, it's coming home to you. Ah, it's anger, but yet it's sweet and it's funny and it relieves us and it's beautiful and it's painful. And if my poetry is able to do that, then I don't mind people saying I write about tough things if there's a beauty that emerges out of it.
Poetry is transformative. And here Kwame has beautifully illustrated how something dark, how the chaos of life, the difficult cesspool of human experience can be transformed into something beautiful. So let's take a moment for a poetry spark now. What I'd like you to do here is to start a blues poem. Now, you can imagine it as anything. You can imagine it as a blues for my mother, a blues for my dog, a blues for myself, a blues for Richard Nixon. It doesn't matter. And a great way to begin is to start with borrowing those evocative lines which Kwame quoted. You know, you can try something like, "Trouble, trouble, I had it all my days," and then get into what kind of trouble has followed you. It's a beautiful, beautiful way to start a poem. Or you could try the other one. It may be a week, it may be a month or two. Is something or someone missing in your life which might not come back anytime soon? Use that line as a starting point, and it's going to send your poem in a totally different direction. Give yourself a good 10 minutes to write a draft of a blues poem. Let's try to turn sadness into empathy and understanding. Let's look for the beauty and humanity in the blues. In this next excerpt, Kwame discusses journalistic distance versus the poet's need to sympathize with their subjects. And we talk about the idea of truth in that. I ask Kwame what poetry can add to facts, especially under really traumatic circumstances.
I was in Haiti. The earthquake happened in January, and I traveled to Haiti in April for the first trip. So I did 5 trips to Haiti over about 6 months, and each trip was about 5 days to a week. I was there to report on the earthquake and, of course, people living with HIV. So I was writing articles and blogs and that kind of thing. But inevitably, and by then I'd done some work in Jamaica on HIV/AIDS and that won an Emmy and all kinds of things. So I think because I'd written poetry and the poetry became the center of that piece of reporting, that did well and won the awards it did. So the funders of the Pulitzer Center on Crisis Reporting are the ones who were funding the reporting trip to Haiti, those trips. And I think they were expecting me to write poems, but I warned them that I don't know whether that's going to happen. And I should say that I can't promise that if I go into a space, I'll write poems. But I find that when things are harrowing, like they were in Haiti, I couldn't miss the opportunity because they stay with me, they haunt me. And one of the ways, the relief, in fact, the poetry is the relief in the midst of the ugliness and the difficult things that I saw there. You know, I met a young kid. He was about 18 years old, 17 years old, HIV positive, contracted the disease from his mother at birth. So he had lived that long with the disease. He said he has to ask himself sometimes, why me? What did my mother do? You know, what has it done to my life? And I was moved, you know, in the interview. I broken by the interview, you know, by his confession and his truth. But in the article, I could write about him with a little more dispassion, you know, a kind of distance. But that night, I went back to my room in the, you know, the hotel I was staying at, and I wrote the poem for him. And it's the poem is called Boy in Blue. In a sense, it is what I could not write in the article, because, you know, the poem, I think, goes into the heart of the person, I think. Anyway, that's what I hope. So, Boy in Blue. His voice is licked, but his dreams are the artillery of words loaded to uncoil our strength. And licked there is defeated. It's a translation by a poet called Michel-Ange Hippolyte. His voice is licked or defeated, but his dreams are the artillery of words loaded to uncoil our strength. The words cluster behind your teeth, close in. The smooth patina, deep brown of your face is alight with the effort, a boy carrying the weight of an old man. This body of yours broken again and again by the accident of your birth. I follow the slow wave of your thick lashes. You are counting the words, searching your heart for the right music. Sometimes I wonder why. Sometimes I wonder if my mother did this. Then I grow dark. The world swallows light around me. Then I cry. Only sometimes I cry and then I laugh. Just like that. In a few seconds I laugh and I cry. And I dream again. The drums sound and the fire tongues dancing beneath the low rafters would be easier. A prophet singing explaining why this earth moves, why so much rubble in our city, even the priest with his soft horse eyes, his mouth moving quickly over my skin. Even that would be easier than this silence. The dark streets of the city, the heat in my skin, my mother praying in the shadows, singing from deeper than I will ever go. When I sing, I know how to fly and how to reach where the water eases the spinning in my stomach. And this blood is not my enemy when I sing. We leave you in the growing dusk. The scent of rain is heavy in the air. Somewhere beside the broken palace, the sky opens up and the streets flood. The sound of cataclysms, so normal now. I imagine you, like these children, dancing in the deluge, naked as holiness. So you know, this is a kid who says he wants to be a singer. And he said when he sings, everything disappears.
I love that bit about the, when I sing, the blood is not, this blood is not my enemy. I'm curious about being a journalist and a poet and doing your fun radio and, radio. And film as radio. Well, right?
I work in film. We do documentary things. I work with a photographer. So I write, I do a lot of print work. So, you know, some of these pieces would, the fuller articles and interviews would, you know, appear in, you know, USA Today and Washington Post and so on. So some appeared in major places. And then, of course, some of it is in very, very focused, you know, medical publications and so on.
And, of course, blogs and these kind of things. And I'm wondering, like, because I used to do freelance journalism. I wasn't very good at it. In fact, I hated it. And I remember when I kind of officially, in my mind, at least, quit and was like, you know, and I think about it a lot. And I think I always had this feeling that as a journalist, I was trying to get at a truth that I could never get at. And that when I turned to poems more, I felt that I could articulate, actually in a way more honest than the journalism and more truthful, or at least emotionally truthful, to my experience and my understanding of these experiences and the people I was meeting. And I wonder if you feel the same way, or what the poem adds to the journalism and how you can keep doing the journalism and how you kind of work through that.
It's a great question. And in truth, I treat them as very different. And this is what I I'm very, very disciplined about never letting these two things interfere with each other. The journalism is frustrating. It's absolutely frustrating because even talking to this kid, he would say something, but I knew what he meant behind what he was saying, and I could, you know, it's obvious. You know it. I mean, you know what I mean? He may not use the words, but for the article, if he doesn't say it, it is not happening. I cannot speculate and say, well, you know, I feel this way and so on and so forth. So for me, and the interview process when you're doing a journalistic piece is very, very, it's almost insensitive, you know, you because you have to get them to say it, you know, so you have to probe. And sometimes a person's eyes are tearing up and they're saying to you, this is how I felt about it. And human dynamic, you get it, you understand. But writing that their eyes teared up in an article, the editor is going to say, well, it could have been dust in their eyes. We don't know. What was he thinking? What did he say? And so you'd have to say, so how are you feeling now? God knows, I know you're feeling awful, but please tell me how you're feeling now, which is completely insensitive and crazy. So it's frustrating for sure. But I've come to trust its value. I've come to trust the value of the cold, hard journalist piece that allows a kind of human dimension, but that demands a kind of critical sort of justification, support, evidence, and so on. But my salvation in that context is I'm a poet as well. So I know that all this stuff that I'm doing, I can go away and make the poem that is the human moment. So we went back to Haiti about 3 weeks ago, took the poems and a performance with musicians and so on and so forth. And the people that I interviewed were there, sitting there in front of us in the audience, and we had it in translation and so on. And they came and they embraced me. They said, this is beautiful and so on, by the poems. Would never see any need to take the articles back. Because in a sense, the articles gave the information, the facts and so forth, which, you know, for them, at least as long as you were true to what we were saying, this is good. But the poems, they wept at the poems because the poems were both an articulation of what I've heard, but me and my heart bursting in dialogue with their experience. And that human connection is irreplaceable, and nothing can achieve that as well as a poem can, because the poem is not reporting. The poem is happening in itself. It has its own integrity. The poem has its own logic and its integrity as a poem. It's not a reporting mechanism. The journalists look at it and say, "Wow, that's an innovative way to report." And I'm saying, well, you know, if it wins me an Emmy, good. If you think that way, but for me, I'm not doing a reporting thing. What I'm doing is I'm reaching for a core truth in the moment, and I believe that completely because I see it happening again and again. And the test is when the people who I've written the poems about respond to me. Even when I transform facts, when I change details, they know this is our heart. That to me is powerful because they are responding to poetry.
Right. In the interview, they talked about their father. In the poem, you're writing about a mother because if it fits the poem needs that kind of change. And they forgive that, right? Because you're articulating this feeling that you're almost a conduit.
The journalist cannot speculate. The poet, however, can. You don't have to ask, how are you feeling, or how did that make you feel? You know. You can guess. Poetry is not facts. Poetry is not just reporting an experience, but as Kwame says, it's a dialogue between experiences. So now a poetry spark, if you will. You'll have had some experience which was reported by somebody else. Perhaps you've been to a political rally, a local council meeting, an award ceremony, maybe a retirement party. Or you may have been involved in something more dramatic, witnessed a robbery or mugging, perhaps a friend's house burned down, and you had the chance to talk to him about it. So what I want you to do is to take a few minutes now and remember one of those instances where your life or the life of those around you have been covered in the press. Try not to recreate the event, not to describe it like a journalist, but to inhabit it like a poet. So pause the podcast if you can, get a bit of paper and show Don't Tell how you felt, how people around you may have felt, and feel free to change facts in an effort to get at an emotional truth. If you pause the podcast, welcome back. We want you to feel free to share your work or thoughts with us in the Line Break group on campus. There's a great poetic community there to engage with, and thanks to everyone who has been posting poems and thoughts and ideas. I found out a lot about gorilla knitting recently. On campus, you too can share your own work, other sparks, and tell us where you found your own poem. Visit campus.poetryschool.com and look for the Line Break. Now, Kwame has had a rich amount of firsthand experiences, but I don't personally think that is always necessary in order to make a good poem. What is necessary is to write, and I fully encourage you to have a look through your favorite newspaper and to see if any details attract your attention. Remember, even in Kwame's journalism, there was a moment where a boy questioned his right to existence with that brilliant quote. So I find in a piece of really good journalism, there's often the hint of a poem, a moment that can be expanded and made into something new, something to keep in mind, perhaps, when you're next reading the Sunday paper or, in fact, while you're listening to this next excerpt.
I write a lot. Poetry is a way for me. Poetry is a living. And I don't mean a living that I make my living of it, but I live by it. So writing is, and I always tell writers, in workshop, you know, you're right, write it. I mean, don't not write it. Write it. I mean, you come to the issue of whether you publish it or not. You fight that battle. What I've just found is that there's a weird thing about writing with complete integrity that even beyond what we suspect might happen when we've written this poem and put it out there, the integrity of our writing it with full honesty surprises us and surprises even the people who thought, "You can't write this about me," when they look at it and they go, Well, of course. This I don't care. This should be out there. But if we restrict ourselves and edit ourselves, or we come to the position where we say, well, I can't write about this, then we'll never know. We'll never see what the value of the thing is. So writing it is one thing. Publishing it, different exercise, yeah. Different discussion. Yeah, this is a poem for a guy called Joel Santon. Joel is a pastor who was booted out of the church. And the way he tells it, when he found out he was HIV positive, he told the church he was a leader in. And they said, well, this is a problem, you know, how did you contract and so on? And he admitted that it was through his wife. She already, before they married, she already had the disease, didn't tell him. She didn't think it was true, the diagnosis. It was a very odd situation. And so he contracts the disease, and they tell him that he must divorce her. He must put her, send her home to back to her family. And he said, no, he can't do that. He doesn't think that's biblically, you know, sincere or anything like that. And he loves her, and he's going to care for her. And even though there was anger and all of those things, he said he wouldn't do it. In anger, they boot him out of the church because he wouldn't do that. But he then proceeds to create his own group or congregation of people who live with the disease, and he travels around and does this tremendous work. And when I met him, he was living in a building that was condemned. In Haiti, after the earthquake, you would get a little thing painted on your wall. If it was green, you could continue staying there. If it was yellow, it meant it had some infrastructural damage, but could be fixed, but you could still live in there. If it was red, it meant that this could fall any minute. This is condemned. And his house was had the red marker. But he stayed there because he couldn't. He had tried living in the tent cities, and because of his disease and he had asthma, he was getting sick. So he decided to risk living in the building anyway. So that's the core of the poem. So it's called Job, for Joel Santon. This is a home. This is a shelter. These are walls shaken. These are lines of jagged cracks. The split at the ceiling that lets in light and rain. This is my comfort, here deep in the catacombs of Port-au-Prince, shaded by a giant breadfruit tree with its fragile branches, its bounty. Here where the yard is cluttered with trash, drying leaves and broken bricks salvaged from the ruins, dumped here for use later, they keep saying. They being those searching through the broken houses for paper, and in truth, for money, bread, pots, clothes, and an answer to our calling of her name. This is home where I pray each night. Teach me the calculus of Job. Teach me the madness of Hosea. Teach me how to be a priest of suffering. Teach me how to gamble your name for my gain. Teach me to dream of open skies, air clear as creek water, for these ravaged lungs, fruit to flesh out these bones under my beaten skin, sugar to make me fat. May you wake me before the next cataclysm, that I might rise and leave this place before it too collapses, like all things have. Teach me how to sleep deeply, with the faith that you will wake me when it is time. Teach me to sleep with no hope of rising under this cracked shelter. Teach me, man, listless like this, blood sick like this, shunned like this. Teach me the way of Job. Teach me.
This has been a heavy podcast with a lot of weighty stories to think about. One thing I'm especially loyal to is the idea of just writing it. If you write something with 100% honesty, you don't know what you'll find in yourself or in the subject you've set your eye to. However, if you don't write about it, you'll never know what you could have made. With that in mind, I want to end with one final poetry spark. I want you to think of someone you love, someone you know well, or maybe not so well, that doesn't really matter. Someone you feel has been brave, but also perhaps suffered. And I want you to write that person a poem directly to them. Note how Kwame starts his poem for Joel Santon with a detailed description. Try that. Write the building, the town, the city block where that person calls home. Imagine where they are or picture a place you remember being together. Call it a poem for blank. That's all for this episode. If you want to check out more of Kwame Dawes's work, get a copy of Duppy Conqueror. It's his latest collection. It's from Copper Canyon Press, and it is absolutely brilliant. If you're interested in having a look at Kwame's award-winning documentary work, check out livehopelove.com. It features a load of videos and poems and journalism, and it's absolutely stunning. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Good luck writing your poetry sparks. I can't wait to see what you come up with. Check us out on campus.poetryschool.com, where you'll find the Line Break group. Send us your poems, send us your thoughts, send us new poetry sparks. Can't wait to hear from you, and we can't wait to be in your ears again with another new episode from the Line Break next month. To find out more about this or other episodes, visit Campus, the Poetry School's online community for poets. And join the Line Break group to share your work and get all the latest news and updates. That's campus.poetryschool.com. We are grateful for the support of the Scottish Poetry Library, and make sure to subscribe to the Scottish Poetry Library podcast via iTunes or whatever podcast service you use. The Line Break is produced by Culture Laser Productions. You can follow us on Twitter at Culture Laser and hear more of our interview podcasts on culturelaser.com. Theme music by Ragland.